With me later. We'll have time afterwards to catch up, but we have a lot to get to this morning, some things to share at the end of worship, and so we want to make sure we leave time for that and don't miss those things. If you have a Bible, you can turn to Matthew 5. We're going to read the verses that are really forming the heart of the series we're in called Salt and Light. We're talking about God's call not only to us as individuals to be salt and light in the world, but God's invitation for us together as a community to be those two things. We'll read that passage in just a couple minutes. In this series, we're also trying to live in this tension between the already and the not yet. I talked about this at length last week, and if you didn't catch it, you can go and listen to the podcast. This is worth having in your tool belt, just your language, your theological tool belt as a Christian in this world, to understand that we live in this place between what has already happened, both in the cross, looking that far back, but also in our world right now. We can look at things that God has already done, but we also look at our world and realize there's a lot that has yet happened, yet to happen. There's a lot that is not yet as it should be. So we live in this space between the already and the not yet. And God calls us to do two things, to celebrate what has already happened. And I think sometimes we forget to do that. We forget to just pause and take stock of what has happened. So we're trying to do that in this series, trying to look at what has already happened at the Branch and celebrate it. We'll do that later. But then also to acknowledge that there's a lot that is yet to be as it should be. And what God invites us to do with those things is to step courageously towards them, to engage them in a way that might bring restoration and healing. So we live in this tension between the already and the not yet, and it really, again, comes out of this idea of salt and light. And speaking of light, I had a bright idea this week, no pun intended, to replace the lights in our children's closets. Very simple project, I thought. Have you ever had a simple project turn into a not simple project? Yeah. Oh, one. Yes. Anyone else? All right. Just this. Does it ever go as you plan it to go? I don't know. I think this is simple. Two lights to replace. I've after work, fly to one of the stores. I grab what we need. I get home, throw down some dinner. By that time, it's about 7. And, you know, the sun is setting earlier, so I know I've got about an hour and a half of natural light left. And this matters because I'm in closets, and we're going to have to turn off the power. And so I'm going to be without light pretty soon, right, without any natural light. So I get to work, begin by turning off the circuit breaker, which apparently takes care of about half of our house. So much stuff goes off. Wi-Fi goes off, TV goes off, lights everywhere go off. My kids are like shouting, "Well, the Wi-Fi's off, Dad. You know, the TV doesn't work. It's so dark in here. What do you do?" But it's not a problem. Hold it, you know. Chill out. I get started, and I'm working. I got natural light. It's going okay, but before long, I can't see very well. So I call for reinforcements. Bethany, I need you. She comes, and she turns on her phone's flashlight. This is helpful. This is a helpful light source, but it's not a powerful light source. Would you agree? But even in our situation, in our circumstances, it was helpful enough when she and I were lined up perfectly. You know, when she was standing in the right place, shining the tiny light in the right direction, and my hands did not get in the way. But of course, you're shifting and you're moving tools and you're like trying to get the wires, and it's a mess. I can't see half of what I'm doing. It's not her fault. It's just me, and it's the way that it is. But we're trying to plow ahead. It's not going great. Things are breaking. It's not working. You know, blah blah blah. So I get the idea. I'll turn on my phone's light and put it on the floor. That'll provide some illumination, you know, throughout the room. But of course, I'm looking down into the light. I'm blinded by the light. This is unhelpful. The kids are now again yelling more, like, "It's so dark in here. Dad, turn on the circuit breaker. Do you want me to get electrocuted? I don't think so." "Oh, we don't want you to get electrocuted. We love you." You know, I mean, it's like... I share that story just to illustrate how transformative light is. Light is very powerful, yes? It changes everything. When you're in a dark room and the lights come on, it transforms that space. A light has that property to it. Jesus says the same thing, and then takes it one step further. This is Matthew 5. "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and, here's the thing, in the end, glorify your Father in heaven. Last week, we talked about how these words from Jesus remind us about our identity. This is not just part of some spiritual checklist that Jesus is saying, hey, you know, why don't you kind of squeeze in salt, being salt, I don't know, 2 o'clock maybe, you know, fit it into your life. It's not that kind of thing. It's not something that we just maybe do when we're able to do it or when we think about it. He says, you are. Like, this is part of your very identity. Your existence on this earth is wrapped up in this idea of being salt and light. And again, that's true of you as an individual, and it's true of us collectively. Our collective identity is to be a family that brings God's transformation to the world. We are salt and light together, as we talked about, a place where everyone belongs, and as we'll be talking about today, a family through whom God brings hope and healing to the world. If you still have a Bible, you can turn backwards to Isaiah 58, head left from Matthew 5. Isaiah 58, we're going to read a decent amount of this chapter. Here God paints a picture of what it means to be his family, of what it looks like to be the family of God, and also what it doesn't look like to be the family of God. When we're living into our calling, being light of the world, what does that look like? So this is God talking in Isaiah 58, and God is repeating what the people of Israel, God's people, God's family, what they've been saying. The people of Israel have been saying, hey, why have we fasted and you've not seen it, God? You know, why have we humbled ourselves and you've not noticed? In other words, why have we done this thing, this fasting thing, and it doesn't seem like it's worked? You haven't moved or acted or responded in the way that we thought you would, you know? And God says, yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord? So God is saying, is this what you think this is about? Do you think that this whole thing, this whole part of being, you know, my people is about kind of going through the motions for a day, bending like a reed, lying in sackcloth? Do you think that's what this is about? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? God turns it. Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Have you ever tried to fast? It's really hard, isn't it? Maybe not for you, but for me, and Mike's very hard to do. I have another job, if you didn't know that, and my other job is for a company that does a lot of health screenings for employers and employees, and we often require them to fast before they come to these screenings. And we get some really irritable folks. Like, they're just they're just straight up angry that they've had to fast for 8 hours or whatever it's been. And I get it, you know, the blood sugar's running low, you're out of your normal routine, everything's grumbling, you know, maybe you didn't get to have your mocha from Starbucks and so you're on caffeine withdrawal. I mean, it's hard. And so when I learn of someone who's fasting, I often think, like my knee-jerk reaction is to think, wow, that's really impressive. Because fasting is really hard and I'm like really impressed that you're taking this on, you know. God says that while fasting is good and valuable and a gift actually to us, fasting is actually a gift to us if entered into rightly. If it doesn't lead to a changed life, God's not interested. If it's just an empty routine, God has no patience for it, it would seem from this passage. You can look as pious as you'd like. You can get in ash and sackcloth. But if your heart has not been transformed, you might as well not have done it in the first place. What God says that God desires is for his family, us, to be a people who bring healing and hope. That's how I would maybe summarize those verses like 6, 7, and 8 there. That our light would break forth like the dawn. You ever seen Lord of the Rings? And the Two Towers, and it's the darkest of night, and the army's about ready to take over Helm's Deep. And then on the third day, when the sun, remember Gandalf's words, and the dawn breaks and they ride down the hill. It's like this epic breaking in of light. That's the idea here, that when the sun finally breaks and light spills over the earth, that's what we are to be like. And we do that by loosening chains and setting the oppressed free and sharing our food and our clothing. This is who we're supposed to be. Salt and light. A city on a hill. Little side note. We'll keep that stream of thought going. But it's worth saying, did you notice in verse 8 that as you and I offer healing to others, God says we will find it for ourselves? God says your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will come quickly. The Israelites were longing for healing. And God says, if you offer healing to other people, in that extension of service and of selflessness and of love, you will find healing for yourself. Have you ever had that happen in life where you give up something valuable and the return to you is like tenfold? You can't believe it. It was hard. It was not an easy decision, but once you did it, there was healing that came to you too. Little side thing. We're called to be salt and light, like the dawn breaking over the earth. How do we do that? How do we do that? I want to talk about two specific ways that the branch could be thinking about this idea of being healing and hope to the world. One involves just kind of our life together and what kind of community we are forming here. And the other is the world outside of this church and how we might engage it in some different ways. So let's first talk about our life together as a community. You know, when I reflect on 10 years as a church, one of the things that I see constantly throughout that decade has been that this is a church that creates space for people who have been disillusioned with the church, hurt by the church, given up on the church. This is a community that creates space for those people to come and find healing and hope again. In fact, that is the story of many of you, not all of you, but there are many here, if you didn't know it, who before coming to the branch had given up on church or had been wounded by it, by a leader, by someone in their community, or had just generally speaking given up on the thing. It had become, you know, irrelevant, it had begun to lack meaning. And they came here and they found a place of hope and healing. I had a conversation a few months ago with a couple. They were apologizing because they hadn't been to church in a while. I love it when people do that. They also apologize to me when they swear in front of me. I love that too. It's hilarious. I sometimes, if it's the right person, will swear back at them. Shouldn't say that. But just to help them feel like it's okay, you know, just relax. They were apologizing because they hadn't been in a while. And I said, you don't owe me an apology, you know. But this particular couple grew up in a very conservative home, very rigid religiously. And a lot of their upbringing was wonderful and good. But when they went to college, they encountered a world that was much bigger than the world that they grew up in at home. And it wrecked them. It wrecked them. And they, long story short, ended up walking away from organized religion, away from the church. And it wasn't until decades later that someone from the branch invited them to come to Create. And they did. And in that experience, they began to wonder if there wasn't, in fact, perhaps a church that they could call home that would accept them despite the questions that they had, that would welcome them with open arms, regardless of the fact that they hadn't been in church, in fact, that they had given up on church for a couple decades. Maybe there was a place where they might belong. And I think their story is actually pretty representative of many of your stories. There are many here, again, who've been disillusioned, who've grown cynical. Anyone here grown cynical? I never have any conversations with any of you who've grown cynical about the church, you know, who've wondered about its purpose, its future, its reason for existence. This is a place, this is a community where you can safely do that. There are not many churches like that. I wish there were, but there really just aren't. And I think that's a tremendous gift to the world. In fact, when I think about, and I have these thoughts, should the branch exist? Like, why does the branch exist? There are hundreds of churches around here. Does the world need another church? And I would say, in this part of the world, no. If all we're doing is just doing church as it's been done, the world doesn't need another one. We should just go to many of the ones that are around. But if we desire to be a community that creates space for belonging, including for those who have been wounded by the church, given up on the church, become disillusioned by the church, then there's a reason for our existence, among other things. But that would be one reason for us to say, yes, God has called us to be here for people like that. And it's not just those of you who have already arrived here at the branch and have that as part of your story. We were gifted with a bunch of data, which I know, data, awesome, right? You're like, mm. Some of you, yes, this is fantastic. We were gifted through our denomination a bunch of data about kind of the demographics of the world around us. Just, did you know that there are 10,000 people within one, if you draw a 1 mile radius around this building, there are 10,000 people? Isn't that wild? If you draw a 10 mile radius, which captures really, I think everyone here, as the crow flies, a 10-mile radius around this building, there are 500,000 people. And the trend, this data looked at all sorts of trends about faith and people's beliefs. In 10 years, there's been a 7% decline in those who were once religiously active and are no longer. Now, I don't know if 7% sounds like a lot to you, but in 1 mile of this building, that means 700 people who were engaged are no longer. And within 10 miles, it's 35,000 people who were at one time in those 10 years and are not anymore. And they looked at some of the reasons why people didn't participate in church, and they found that 47% just didn't think it was relevant anymore. So they asked the people who didn't go, who were not part of a faith community, why. That they said it's just not relevant. 54% said it's because they had become disillusioned with religion. Just, I don't know, why do it? You know, what's the point? Is it worth it? I mean, they were just asking all those kinds of questions. 68% said it's because religious people are too judgmental. In other words, I don't think that I can be myself in a faith community and be accepted, right? And numbers are numbers. Again, some people love them, some people don't. I think the point to me as I was looking over all of this data and all these reports was that there unquestionably are people in my life every day who are not a part of a faith community because of these reasons. Every day I'm bumping up against those people. I might not know it, but they're there. And there are lots of them. One more stat here. 20% said that they are not part of a faith community because they haven't been invited. Isn't that interesting? It's not a huge number, but again, I can look at my life and probably say that I'm bumping again, you know, into someone every day who's just waiting for an invitation. And that got me thinking, you know, if let's say we become even more than we already are, because already the branch is a place of belonging and a place where there's space for people to be healed and to find hope again for the church. If we became the best we could possibly be at that, but we never extended an invitation to others to come and be a part of it, we won't grow. More people will not come and be blessed by the community that is here. And so it's been challenging me to think, you know, who in my life is waiting for an invitation? Who in my life is waiting for an invitation? If the numbers are even anything close to accurate, there's somebody in my life right now who is. What would that look like? What would it look like to invite someone to come? There are people all around you every day who are walking away from the church because they don't think it's a place for them, or they've given up hope on it. They become disillusioned. We, I think, one of the unique callings of the branch is to be a church that welcomes those people and offers a place for them to find healing and hope. So that's just something for us to think about as we move forward kind of within the community here. What about outside of the branch? What are some things that are happening? What are some things that God may be calling us to? You may remember in January we had this strategic plan, which is just a fancy way of saying, how are we going to spend our energy and our time in the next 12 months? Part of what we felt like God was saying to us was, be looking and listening for a local partner and a global partner who are being salt and light in the world, and be looking for some partnerships in those areas, both locally and globally. Last spring, I ran into a woman. I was at a lunch for the Baxter Neighborhood Community Center, which is an incredible organization in Baxter. I was there for lunch, and I got introduced to Deanna Bracey, who, little did I know, had actually been at my house talking to Matt Overman about a year before that, and they had a whole conversation. We put those pieces together as we were talking that day after that lunch, and she started telling me about what she was doing in the world. She, a former addict, her mom, a former addict, had felt God's call on her life to help people who were struggling with substance abuse and addiction to overcome it. She felt God calling her to be a light to people for whom the world feels like it's a very dark place. So she, without any training or without any really knowledge of even how to do it, started a nonprofit and started to try and work and gather people and be a place of healing and hope. And so we had a conversation, but it was short. She had to go. I had to go. I said, let's grab coffee. So we did. And then we invited her to come to our missional community and tell her story. And then she started working with some people at our missional community about getting her communication tools, her website, her grant proposals cleaned up and polished and all of that stuff. And we want to take one more step with her and invite her to partner with, or invite all of you to partner with her. And we're going to do that through a thing called Rice and Beans this next week. So we'll introduce Deanna here at the end of worship. But there is a local partner, someone who's being salt and light, and who needs partnership. She'll say it very freely. She is looking for people to come alongside of her and say, we're in your corner. We'll help you. How can we help you? How can we join in what you're doing, what God's doing through you? So that's a local component, just to kind of let you know about that. And we'll introduce her in a few minutes. And then globally, we've been listening for that. And we got introduced to an organization called Kenya Matters. And Kenya Matters, no surprise, as the name would imply, is involved in work in Kenya. There are some people at the branch who are already connected to this ministry. Kenya Matters nurtures orphans in Karai, Kenya, and empowers them to live interdependent and productive lives in their home there in Kenya. They do all sorts of work Some stuff that may feel very kind of familiar to you. You know, they help water. They dug a well. They helped build a school, these sorts of things. We're going to partner with them and especially do so around Advent. The 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, we're going to have a gift catalog available. And you'll have the opportunity to make a gift towards that ministry to help them. Our kids downstairs during Advent will be taking an offering themselves in the hopes that maybe collectively they might be able to pool enough money to buy a goat or to purchase something like that for these folks. But we'll be doing things up here as well. Just trying to turn our attention globally and remember that there is work happening all over the world. And this is one small way that we can partner with it. So those are some things that are happening for us collectively. There's kind of the not yet part. We're just dipping our toes into those things. But we've been listening. God, what do you want us to do? Where should we partner? And these seem to be things that in this moment, in this season, God is leading us towards. There's lots of other stuff happening, though. Let me just give you a few examples. You've probably heard of this thing called beer and hymns, right? Yeah, great, fun, right? If you didn't know, if you weren't aware, part of the reason for beer and hymns, excuse me, part of the impetus for the Millers and the Elzingas is to create a space where people can engage God and other Christians and perhaps find healing and hope. Is it about singing hymns? Absolutely. If you like beer, is it about having a beer? Sure. But there's something much deeper going on there. And that was a call that they felt pulled towards, and so they started that up. Or I think about Dave and Trina Rukas, whose call, God's call to them, was to their very immediate neighborhood. It wasn't to a program at church. It was to an immediate neighborhood. And they've been gathering neighbors slowly over time over the last year. And now they have about, I think, 8 adults, 4 families, and all their little kids that meet regularly, share a meal, through a block party for their crew, for their neighborhood this summer. They're living out, trying to be healing and hope in their immediate neighborhood. Petters just had a block party this weekend. Same sort of thing. You know, there are lots of people here at the branch who are thinking about where they live and trying to be very intentional about that place, gathering community, being healing and hope. I think about Mark Carroll. Mark, next week we'll tell you in more detail, but Mark is going to start something around here called Branch Adventures. Probably 3 or 4 times a year, going to do fun outdoor type things, like maybe dog sledding or cross country. I'm not joking. Or cross country skiing. You should listen to Mark. He's got some great ideas. You know, they're going to get started on a lower the bar to get started, and we're just going to mountain bike right around in this neighborhood here. There are actually some mountain bike trails, believe it or not. Kids can come. Adults can come. Mark's going to tell us about that next week. But the reason why Mark is doing this is, yes, to build community within the branch, but he also believes that it's a place where people outside of the branch, people who maybe wouldn't come to something like this on a Sunday, might come and might begin to catch a glimpse of a church where they would find hope and healing. I think about a team of people that is going to start forming here in the next couple of months around racial equity. Angela Johnson, I think of as someone who's thinking a lot about this, trying to work towards this. I mean, racial equity is a deep, profound, complex, and complicated issue. We've been taking steps throughout the year, small steps. We feel like we want to keep taking more. So there's going to be a team that's going to form around that. And if you're interested in just being a part of a conversation, you can see Angela today. You can see myself. But that the whole goal of that is healing and hope for our world around that issue. Think of Jeff and Sarah, who felt the call of God to invite 2 18-year-old Afghan boys to live in their house. It's not a program at church, you know. It was just God's call, God's leading. And for them, I mean, I would imagine, right, this was about healing and hope, creating a space for these guys to have family, to adjust to this new life here. I think about our missional community that meets on Thursdays that just started to just decided to co-sponsor a refugee family. We're going to work on that in the next month. Invite all of you actually to participate in that. That for us is about healing and hope. There are all kinds, my point is that there are all kinds of things happening around here. It's one of the things that I love about this church, is that you are people who are looking for ways to be healing and hope to a broken world. Keep at it. Don't stop. If you have a dream and you need some help, let us know. If you want to invite other people around here to join in something that God's stirring in your heart, just say the word. We'd love to let other people know about it. But those are some of the things that are happening. And if you're kind of a sitting there today and one of those really struck you, I want to invite you, if you grabbed a Connect card, a bulletin on the way in, I want to invite you to write that down today. Like, wow, beer and hymns. I didn't know that thing existed. I'd love to go. Do they need help? Write your name down. Beer and hymns. Drop it in the offering basket. If you want to be a part of that racial equity team, if you want to join Mark with Branch Adventures and partner with him, if one of those really grabs you, write it down today, put it in the offering basket, and we'll follow up with you this week. This is a church that is already engaged in the work of hope and healing. Let's celebrate that. Amen? Let's not forget about that. Let's not always turn our attention to what is still yet to be done. Let's thank God for that reality, that you are people who are looking to be healing and hope to the world. And yes, let's also look this way and ask ourselves if God wants us to step courageously towards anything and what that might mean. Let me finish by closing with these words from Isaiah again. And I just changed one word in verse 6. Is not this the kind of family I have chosen? God is talking about fasting, right? In verse 6, is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? I just put the word family in there just to connect it to what we're talking about a little bit in this series. And just listen to these words again. Let them kind of sink into your heart a little bit more. Is not this the kind of family I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Let's pray together. God, we are both grateful that we can look at our life together as a church and we can see many ways in which you are working through us to bring healing and hope to the world. When we pause for a moment, God, and think about that, we are humbled that you would choose to use us. And yet, of course you would. You tell us that this is your purpose for your family. This is your call to us, your invitation to us, that we would be salt and light. May you give each one of us clarity about just exactly how you want us to invest our time and our energy to be salt and light. May you help us be courageous in stepping towards those things. And may all of our work and all of our effort and all of our thought be rooted not in our own strength, but in yours, in your goodness, in your faithfulness to us. That is our confidence. That is our hope. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So this morning, as we take communion, a meal which just kind of drips with healing and hope, we're going to do it. We're going to take it by inviting you to come forward. And we'll have a couple stations, one here and one here. Maybe Andy Miller, I don't know, could come up here and be one of the stations. But the other thing I want to invite you to do when you come up is to grab a little packet of salt. We had these on the seat last week. Yours probably already went through the wash or, you know, ended up somewhere. So grab another one, okay? Grab another one. Maybe you did hang on to it still. Grab another one. And let it be this, let your coming forward be both an acceptance of God's healing and hope to you through his broken body, through his blood. And let it also, by coming forward, be a way of saying, I hear your call to me, Jesus, and I'm going to be salt. Because of what you've done, the strength that you give me through your broken body, through your blood, this is who I'm going to be. So you can come forward. Again, we'll have a station here and here. You can grab a packet of salt. Take the bread. Take the cup. We want to invite you to share in this meal with us. No pressure to, of course. We say that every week, but we say it just to be very clear. If you're not ready today to take communion, or if it's maybe borderline an empty routine, like the fasting we read about in Isaiah, it might be better to just stay in your seat and reflect quietly this morning. Maybe pray, maybe search your heart. So there's no pressure to participate. We love you regardless of what you choose. Know that you're welcome, though. You're welcome to come forward and share in this meal. We invite you to do that right now.